We've been considering the question, should the Christian, Houston, we have a problem.
An opportunity.
Well, from my perspective right now, it's a problem. I have no idea why this happens, but we've been taking a deep dive into the question, should Christians keep the Sabbath? And a couple of weeks ago, I made three basic arguments to try to show you that we're not obligated to keep the Sabbath today. First of all, because the covenant commanding Sabbath keeping was made with the Jews alone. And then secondly, the covenant commanding Sabbath keeping has been replaced by the new covenant, which does not require Sabbath keeping. And then the third basic argument is that the Jewish Sabbath was not observed in the early post-apostolic period. Didn't really have time to present information for that third point, but I presented that kind of information, at least to some extent, in our last What Is Written study. Well, last week we looked at some of the arguments that Sabbatarians make from the Old Testament, and this morning I want to look at some of the arguments that they make from the New Testament. I'm trying to equip the saints to at least familiarize you with some of the arguments that Seventh-day Adventists would make to try to support their position. And I have arranged this material kind of sequentially through the New Testament. And so we'll look, first of all, at Matthew chapter 5, verses 17 and following. And Sabbatarians argue that Jesus didn't come to destroy the law. You're very familiar with this passage. It's a part of the Sermon on the Mount where Jesus said, "Do not think that I came to destroy the law or the prophets. I did not come to destroy, but to fulfill. For assuredly I say to you, till heaven and earth pass away, one jot or one tittle will by no means pass from the law till all is fulfilled. Whoever therefore breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches men so shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does and teaches them, he shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven." Based upon the Sabbatarians' understanding of this passage, they would tell you that since I am teaching that we're not obligated to observe the Sabbath today, that I would be least in the kingdom of heaven. So this is a serious question. I want to point out at the outset that if this passage proves that the Sabbath is still binding, it proves the same thing about every jot and tittle, what Sabbatarians would call the ceremonial law. And they say that's been done away. I think that's a problem for them. We can kind of state their argument in the form of a syllogism. The major premise, not one jot or tittle will pass from the law till heaven and earth pass away. Minor premise, heaven and earth have not passed away, therefore nothing has passed away from the law. Now I hope you can see a problem with at least the major premise, because that's not what Jesus said. They leave out a critical part of Jesus' statement. Jesus said, "For assuredly I say to you, till heaven and earth pass away, one jot or one tittle will by no means pass from the law till all is fulfilled." They leave that last part out. I think a similar statement in Luke helps us understand what Jesus is saying. Luke 16, 17 says, "And it is easier for heaven and earth to pass away than for one tittle of the law to fail." What Jesus is saying is that that old covenant law would continue and heaven and earth would pass away first if it didn't continue until all was fulfilled. Again, Sabbatarians believe that what they call the law of Moses, the ceremonial law, has passed away. That's a problem with their argument from this passage. So we ask the question, did Jesus do what he came to do? He said, I didn't come to destroy the law and the prophets, but to fulfill. Did he do what he came to do? Well, if he did, then the law and the prophets could be abrogated after they were fulfilled. If he didn't do what he came to do, then he failed. And if he failed, he can't be the Messiah or the Son of God. Notice this syllogism. Jesus said he came to fulfill the law. In his high priestly prayer, as some have called it, in John 17, verse 4, Jesus said, and we just looked at that recently, Jesus said that he had accomplished the work that God sent him to do. Therefore, Jesus fulfilled the law, and the law could pass away. Over and over again in the Gospel of Matthew, we're told that a particular action of the Lord fulfilled various Old Testament prophecies. Consider this syllogism. Jesus didn't come to destroy the law or the prophets till all is fulfilled. All has been fulfilled with respect to Jesus' incarnation. Look at what Jesus says in Luke chapter 24. Beginning in verse 44. Then he said to them, these are the words which I spoke to you while I was still with you, that all things must be fulfilled which were written in the law of Moses and the prophets and the Psalms concerning me. And he opened their understanding that they might comprehend the scriptures. Then he said to them, thus it is written, and thus it was necessary for the Christ to suffer and to rise from the dead the third day, and that repentance and remission of sin should be preached in his name to all nations, beginning at Jerusalem. And you are witnesses of these things. Jesus fulfilled the Old Testament prophecies pertaining to his incarnation. Therefore, the law and the prophets, as New Testament writers tell us, have been replaced. That little word, till, when Jesus says he didn't come to destroy the law or the prophets, not one jot or tittle would pass till all was fulfilled. That little word, till, implies a termination point. In Matthew chapter 1 and verse 25, we're told that Joseph did not know his wife Mary until after Jesus was born. Well, that implies that he did know her sexually after the birth of Jesus. Well, moving on to another argument that they sometimes make, we are reminded that Jesus told the rich young ruler to keep the commandments. Remember when the rich young ruler came and he asked Jesus, what do I need to do to inherit eternal life? Jesus told him to keep the commandments. Now, when Sabbatarians read the word commandments, and it's convenient for them, they immediately think Ten Commandments. They see the word commandments and they think Ten Commandments. Well, let me remind you of something that you already know, and that is that the rich young ruler lived under the law of Moses. And so we shouldn't be surprised that Jesus would tell him to keep the commandments. Just as he told the leper that he cleansed in Matthew 8, verse 4, to go present himself to the priest and make the gift or the sacrifice that the law required. Just as he told the multitudes and his disciples to obey the law of Moses in Matthew chapter 23. Let me just point out that in this conversation that Jesus had with the rich young ruler, he didn't mention the Sabbath command. Now, the rich young ruler would have been obligated to keep the Sabbath because he lived under that covenant, under that law, but Jesus doesn't specifically mention that command in this conversation. And notice that Jesus included a couple of statements from the so-called ceremonial law. Now, remember from last week, I pointed out that Sabbatarians like to make a distinction between the law of God, the moral law, the Ten Commandments, and the law of Moses. There is no distinction. I tried to show you that. But in Jesus' conversation with the rich young ruler, he refers to loving your neighbor as yourself. Is that a part of the Ten Commandments? Do this. It's not a part of the Ten Commandments. It's a part of what Sabbatarians call the ceremonial law from Luke 19, verse 18. In Mark's account of this conversation, he tells the rich young ruler, don't defraud. That's not a part of the Ten Commandments. Time and time again, Sabbatarians will point to a whole host of passages in the New Testament that say, keep the commandments. But none of these passages say the Ten Commandments. Sabbatarians assume when they see the word commandments that that means the Ten Commandments, but God has other commandments. Paul told the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians 14, 37, the things that I write unto you are the commandments of the Lord. Well, certainly what Paul wrote the Corinthians was not the Ten Commandments. God has other commandments. We can't just see the word commandments in a passage and immediately and automatically assume, well, that means we've got to keep the Ten Commandments. Well, another argument that Sabbatarians make is that from Jesus' Olivet Discourse in Matthew chapter 24 and parallels, where Jesus prophesied the destruction of Jerusalem, they argue that in that discourse, Jesus indicated that Sabbath keeping would be going on when Jerusalem was destroyed in AD 70. So their argument is, you've got Sabbath keeping after the cross. I have argued that the old covenant was nailed to the cross, replaced by the new covenant at that time. But Sabbatarians said, well, wait a minute, Kevin. Jesus said in this discourse, pray that your flight not be in winter or on the Sabbath. And so they're arguing that Christians were keeping the Sabbath in AD 70 when the Romans came to destroy Jerusalem. Let me just ask you, how would you respond to that? I'm not asking you to do that. I'm asking you to think about that. And if you're not sure how you would respond to that, then I hope that this study will be helpful to you. First of all, let me point out that this does not say that Jesus commanded Sabbath keeping. It just doesn't say that. It doesn't say that Jesus' disciples would be keeping the Sabbath in AD 70. I would also point out that if this statement proves Sabbath keeping as a holy day, wouldn't it prove winter as a holy season? Doesn't that logically follow? Sabbatarians don't believe that winter is a holy season. The truth of the matter is that Jesus was concerned not about the sacredness of the day or the season, but the safety of the disciples. You see, there would be problems if you had to flee during the winter time because of the bad weather and all of that. There would be problems if you had to flee on the Sabbath because the city of Jerusalem would be shut down. The gates would be locked. You're going to have trouble getting out of the city. They would certainly not get any assistance from Jews that were still following the old covenant law. In fact, they might even face danger from Jewish zealots who would try to persecute them or punish them because in their eyes they weren't keeping the Sabbath. And there might even have been some hesitancy among Jewish Christians who maybe still thought, well, we need to be keeping the Sabbath. So this passage does not prove what Sabbatarians claim. Well, another argument that they make is that Jesus kept the Sabbath. And the New Testament teaches that we're to follow the example of Jesus, and therefore we should keep the Sabbath. How would you respond to that? Well, the first thing that I would point out is that, of course, Jesus kept the Sabbath because he was born under the law. And the law that he lived under required Sabbath keeping, but we're not under that law today. Paul told the Romans in Romans 7 that we've been discharged from that law. We've been, we're dead to that law. I would also point out that Jesus kept the Passover, and he paid the temple tax, and he visited Jerusalem on holy days or feast days, and he taught others to keep all the law. So should Christians today do all that Jesus did? You see the point? Yes, Jesus kept the law because he lived under the law. And he taught others to keep the law because they lived under the law, but that law has been replaced. And the new law of Jesus does not require Sabbath keeping. Jesus obeyed the law he lived under. We obey Jesus today when we obey the law that we live under. And that law does not require Sabbath keeping. Well, another argument that Sabbatarians make is that Jesus says in Mark chapter 2 that the Sabbath was made for man. Let's turn and look at that passage, if you will. Mark chapter 2, notice verse 27 and 28. And he said to them, "The Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore, the Son of Man is also Lord of the Sabbath." And Sabbatarians argue, since the Sabbath was made for man, then we need to keep the Sabbath today. Well, notice that it says it was made for man, not when man was made. Remember, Nehemiah tells us that the Sabbath was given or made known to the Israelites at Mount Sinai. And remember that we've already pointed out that God made the Sinai covenant, which required Sabbath keeping, with Israel and not others. He didn't make that covenant with the fathers. He didn't make that covenant with the surrounding Gentile nations. He didn't give the Gentiles that law. Yes, the Sabbath was made for man, but it was made for the man to whom that requirement was given. A Jew was a man. The fact that Jesus describes himself as Lord of the Sabbath means that he had authority over the Sabbath, not to break it or disregard it while he lived under that law, but he had authority over the Sabbath. And that means that he knew how to interpret the Sabbath properly. And the Pharisees were not doing that. And he had the authority to abolish the law and the prophets when all was fulfilled. And that's what the New Testament says that he did. And so Mark chapter 2, verse 27 tells us why the Sabbath was given under the old law. It was given for the benefit of man. The Pharisees, with all of their nitpicky regulations, had made the Sabbath to be a burdensome thing. Mark chapter 2 and verse 28 tells us that Christ has authority over the Sabbath, but neither of these statements tell us whether the Sabbath is commanded under Christ's new law. They just don't tell us that. And we know from other passages that the Sabbath is not required under the new covenant. Well, they remind us that after Jesus' death, before he was raised on the first day of the week, that the women who came to the tomb, they kept the Sabbath. This was after the cross. Look at Luke 23:56. Then they returned and prepared spices and fragrant oils, and they rested on the Sabbath according to the commandment. Sabbatarians are quick to point. This was after the cross. This was after, you say, Kevin, that the law was nailed to the cross. After that old covenant was replaced by the new covenant. And here you've got these women resting on the Sabbath. What about that? Well, I ask you, what about that? So let's think about that. Paul told the Colossians, in Colossians 2, that the handwriting of ordinances or requirements was nailed to the cross. I believe he's talking about the old law of Moses. But the women who rested on the Sabbath right after Jesus' death, they were following the only law they knew at the time. The Hebrew writer makes it plain that a testament becomes effective at the death of the testator. We all understand that when it comes to last wills and testaments. Man makes a will, he can change that will umpteen times until he dies, and when he dies, his last will and testament goes into force. And so, Jesus' last will and testament, the new covenant, it went into effect at the cross. But one can't follow the instructions of a will until that will is probated, until that will is read. That hadn't happened yet. And may I remind you that Jesus told the apostles in John chapter 16 that he had more to tell them, but they couldn't bear it then. They weren't ready for that, so he was going to send the Holy Spirit who would guide them into all truth. Jesus had not revealed all of his instructions during his lifetime. And so these women were following the only law they knew at the time. Later on, they're going to be taught that that old law had been replaced by the new covenant. Well, we're told that the Apostle Paul kept the Sabbath. Well, what these passages tell us is that Paul was preaching on the Sabbath, not necessarily keeping the Sabbath. And when Paul went into the synagogues, he was preaching to non-Christians. He was preaching to Jews and to some Gentiles. The fact that he was preaching does not in and of itself imply endorsement. He preached to the Athenian philosophers on Mars Hill in the city of Athens. Does that mean that he endorsed everything that those Athenian philosophers believed? Certainly not. If a Sabbatarian preaches on Sunday, is he keeping Sunday? If I preach on Saturday, and I think I've done that a few times in my life, if memory serves me correctly, does that mean I'm keeping the Sabbath? Paul told the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians 9 that he became all things to all men so that he might win some. And so when he was with the Jews, he would live like a Jew. When he was with Gentiles, he would live like a Gentile. And so there were times that Paul did respect certain Jewish customs and traditions. But when it comes to Paul's teachings, he taught that the law of Moses had been nailed to the cross. In Acts chapter 13, when Paul was preaching in the synagogue there in Antioch, it was the unbelievers who selected the day, who asked him to preach the next Sabbath. Luke tells us that it was Paul's custom to preach on the synagogue. Why did he do that wherever he went? Well, he knew there would be religious people there. He kind of had a ready-made audience, so he went where the people were. But there are passages that also tell us that Paul preached daily. You see my point? If Paul preaching on the Sabbath means that he kept the Sabbath, then Paul preaching daily would mean what? And he preached on the first day of the week in the city of Troas. So if Paul preaching on the Sabbath means he kept the Sabbath, wouldn't Paul preaching on the first day of the week means that he kept the first day of the week? Sabbatarians don't believe that. And whatever Paul proves for the Sabbath, it proves for Pentecost, because he was wanting to get to Jerusalem, we're told in Acts 20, by Pentecost. Well, some argue that when we're told that the disciples came together to break bread and Paul preached unto them until midnight, Acts 20 and 7, passage we're all very familiar with, that the Lord's Supper was observed on the Sabbath in Troas. And it kind of relates to how time was calculated in the ancient world. And various nations or cultures calculated time in different ways. For the Babylonians, their day began at sunrise. For the Umbrians, I don't even know who the Umbrians are. You were supposed to smile. They calculated their day from noon to noon. Romans from midnight to midnight. The Athenians and the Jews from sunset to sunset. Well, if you use Jewish time when you're looking at Acts chapter 20, verse 7 and verse 11, remember, the Jewish day began in the evening, sunset, let's say 6 p.m. So Paul preaches until midnight. We don't know when he started. Some brethren think he started at 11:30, but you were supposed to smile at that again. We don't know when he started. But it's obviously an evening gathering because there's lights in the building. So according to Jewish time, Saturday begins at 6 p.m. And so according to Jewish reckoning, the first day of the week would begin on what would be our Saturday evening. Are you with me? I hope you are. Paul preaches until midnight. That's still the first day, right? According to Jewish reckoning, because it started at 6 p.m. The next morning, he departs. That's still the first day of the week, right? According to Jewish reckoning. Are you with me? But notice that we're told in verse 7, I think it is, that Paul intended to depart on the morrow. Well, if you use Jewish reckoning, did Paul depart on the morrow or did he depart on the same day? He departed on the same day, right? He didn't do what he intended to do. If you use Jewish time calculation. But notice if we use Roman time, midnight to midnight. So we get to Sunday at 6 p.m. Remember, Sunday has started at midnight. So this would be Sunday evening according to Roman time. So the first day is continuing. Paul preaches till midnight, so that means the second day begins. Everybody following me? Then Monday morning at 6 a.m., Paul departs, so the second day continues. Are you with me, Nikki? So we're told that Paul intended to depart on the morrow, and according to Roman calculations, that's exactly what he did. Why should we believe that Paul used Roman time, or that Luke used Roman time in his account? Well, Troas was a Gentile city, and Asia was a Gentile nation, and Luke was a Gentile writer. And the fellow he was writing to, a fellow named Trophimus, that's a Gentile name. And then all of the pieces fit together if you use Roman time. And so I don't believe Luke was using Jewish time. I think he was using Roman time. Sabbatarians like to argue that this breaking of bread in Acts 27 is not talking about the Lord's Supper. That it's just talking about eating a common meal. They would argue that the disciples came together to break bread and they actually break bread the next morning when Paul breaks bread later in the passage. But notice the differences between verse 7 and verse 11. Verse 7 is talking about a gathering on the first day of the week of disciples. They came together. Paul tells the Corinthians that you come together to partake of the Lord's Supper. They broke bread, and that kind of language is obviously used by Paul in chapter 10 of 1 Corinthians with reference to the Lord's Supper. Then Paul speaks till midnight, ready to depart the next day. This is obviously, I think, a religious gathering. Religious things were going on. So there's every reason to believe that this breaking of bread in verse 7 was the Lord's Supper. But now what about verse 11, where we're told Paul broke bread? Well, it's the next day, which would mean Monday. Paul's the only one who is mentioned as eating anything. And remember, he's getting ready to leave. When you look at the passage, and we don't have time to do that, his companions had already left on a boat. Paul's going to walk across an isthmus, I guess you'd call it, and meet up with his companions who are sailing around that in a boat. Eutychus falls asleep, falls out the window, dies. You suppose that broke up the assembly? I think if somebody dies, that's going to kind of break up the assembly. I was preaching one Sunday morning in Johnson City, and one of the older ladies got up to go to the restroom, and her hip, or her, I guess her hip broke, and then she fell. Because people heard the pop first, and then she falls. Well, I'm standing here in the pulpit, and I just stop, and brethren certainly rush to assist her, because we don't know what's happened. And finally, they decide, well, we need to call, an ambulance or something. And I'm standing here, and well, that broke up the assembly. There wasn't any point in me continuing my sermon on that occasion. Paul breaks bread that morning. I think that means he ate a common meal. He talks till daybreak, and then he departs. This word Paul spoke till midnight, that word is used to talk about religious teaching when Paul disputed, reasoned, that kind of thing. This word eaten is used figuratively. Jesus tasted death for all men, Hebrews 2:9. It's also used literally to talk about either drinking or eating food, but it's never used for the Lord's Supper. Well, we're out of time. And we'll conclude this deep dive at this point. I hope our study has been informative and helpful to you. Thank you.